You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Tiger Lacks Cast. Jerry Price, joined by Princeton men's lacrosse head coach Matt Madelon. Coach Madelon, welcome back for episode 3.
Thrilled to be here. Excited to hear about the traction we're receiving.
Yeah, it's going pretty well. Getting a lot of feedback from people, a lot of alums from going back into the 60s, from guys who played with Bryce, and a lot of guys from recent years have checked in, and a lot of people like it. And I think what they like about it is that it's sort of a direct line to what you're thinking, who you are, as they get to know you and they get to know the program. And I thought that'd be a good place for us to start today, which is that, you've said, and I think it was Joe Bresci who said it, that you heard say it, that as you move up the coaching ranks, it's good to have every spot along the way, and that's sort of what happened to you, being a volunteer assistant and then being an assistant coach and a coordinator and working your way all the way up to head coach. That was Bresci who said that, right?
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that and the impact that that's had on you.
So,
and also why that resonated with you.
It was a conversation that, a family member of mine had with Coach Bresci. And it was around, when I was a young assistant coach at Stevens Tech, trying to come through the ranks, and whether it's cracking into the Division I level or preparing yourself to become a head coach. The idea was, by the time you're, say mid-30s, or when you're getting ready to take over as a head coach, his thought process was that being able to hold every position on a staff, whether it would be a volunteer coach, a first assistant, a second assistant, a recruiting coordinator, an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, the ability to do that in your early career will help you become a head coach, because when it comes time to hire those positions or make heavy-handed decisions, you know the levels of accountability within them and how they should be held and operated. So it was great advice. It's advice that I've lived by. And I think to this point, it's helped me get where I am. And it also has helped me in terms of the hiring process and also the expectations and levels of accountability on a day-to-day basis.
So, having held all of those positions, what's it like on game day? Not the preparation, not everything that goes into it, not even, what your responsibility on that game day is, but, in the 2 minutes before the game is about to start, is your feeling of anticipation, excitement, nervousness, adrenaline, whatever it is, how has that evolved from players through all those different positions and now to being the head coach?
Sure. I don't think it ever really changes. I think that's why, I'm in the profession. I think it's the excitement. It's the competitive drive. It's also to kind of see how your product stacks up against your peers and your competitors' product. I think that, in the 2 minutes leading up to a game, it's funny to think back to those instances. You're normally just trying to make sure your coordinators are comfortable, confident in their game plans, making sure our guys are ready to go. But at that point, the hay's in the barn, and you're kind of just looking forward to getting out and getting that first whistle. As a player, I was never, the nervous type. I was never the type that got really hyped up and excited. It was more about just being prepared and kind of taking advantage of the opportunity in front of you, but really just being calm and prepared. I think when I was at my best, it's when I'm most calm. And I think that kind of translates to my coaching career as well. I think that, as coaches, we try to, we talk to our guys about composure constantly. And I think we try to preach that as coaches as well. I think that, it never seems, as bad as it is, and it never seems as good as it truly is too in the games. And when you're in that moment, you feel the emotion. And I think that, as a staff and especially a young head coach, I'll try to keep my composure for our guys, because I think that it instills a bit of confidence in them when you've got a calm coaching staff in front of them.
What about superstitions? Were you a superstitious player?
I was. As a goalie, you have your routines of when you hop into the cage, you do this or that just to get your mindset ready. As a coach, my superstitions go out the window. It's all preparation throughout the week. Unfortunately, I won't be in a helmet, so none of my superstitions will help me.
So it's March now, and the month of February, the storylines the last couple of years usually are the weather and how bad the weather is and how cold it is and how these games are played in awful weather, and wouldn't it be great to play these games in better weather? The weather for February basically could not have been better. There hasn't really been a game where, you know, there's been snow and where it's been 12 degrees out, where there's every year there's game after game after game like that. So it gives the sense, to me at least, that the season's a little further along than it really is. Not the Princeton season per se, but the entire lacrosse season. And, you know, certain things have started to emerge, certain themes of the season. Are you so wrapped up in what Princeton's doing that you don't have time to look around at the landscape of it? Or do you follow things pretty closely as you know, out the entirety of the sport of lacrosse?
We follow it pretty closely as a staff. Me personally, I think that, you know, you're always watching and learning and just kind of taking notes of what's going on around you. But at the same time, I mean, we are very hyper-focused on our program and our guys and getting them off and running. So to your weather point, yeah, it's been outstanding. We've been blessed up here on 52 Stadium. We've had a bunch of beautiful days to practice. We had a couple games, beautiful sunny weather. So I think the weather may take a turn, but for right now, we're still trucking along. We're feeling great about it.
Do you pay attention to what the other schools in the league are doing, knowing that you're still 2 weeks away from that? Or
we do. I mean, we always keep tabs on them. We start, you know, preparing for teams, you know, a couple weeks out if need be. So specifically Ivy teams, and you know, when it all boils down to it, out of conference play is important, but in conference play is kind of where your money's made.
So the most recent game for Princeton was a loss 10-8 to Hofstra last Saturday on Sherrod Field, a game in which one goal in the first 48 minutes and then seven more in the last 12. What do you think was the number one cause of that, and what do you take out of that game more than anything else?
Sure. You know, not the outcome we wanted. Definitely got out to a slow start offensively, and that's not to take away anything from what Hofstra did and their staff. And you know, they did a great job preparing their team for our systems, and they did a great job executing. I think what Hofstra did very well is they didn't make mistakes. You know, they didn't really ever shoot themselves in the foot. And I think that it took us a while to kind of limit our mistakes and get going. And then when it came down to it, you know, we weren't able to play complementary lacrosse. You know, when our defense was getting a stop, you know, our offense would turn the ball over. When our offense would score, you know, we wouldn't win the next faceoff. So I think that, you know, as a coaching staff, we took a step back and said, hey, look, here's, you know, it's a bigger picture. It's more of the complementary lacrosse. We need to get playing as a full team for 60 minutes instead of, you know, just doing well defensively here, doing well offensively here, and more or less just trying to put the whole thing together. So that's a little bit of early season woes. But, again, nothing to take away from what Hofstra did. They did an outstanding job. It was a good team. But we got to play a better 60 minutes of lacrosse.
So three games in, and you know, maybe the brightest spot has been Tyler Blaisdell, who each of the three games has had a save percentage over 60%. His save percentage was below 50% for the year last year. And he's not making just routine saves. He's made a lot of game-changing type of saves. And it really was a main reason why Princeton was able to win that game against Marist. Was, you know, had a really good game against Hofstra as well, and saw a lot of shots and made a lot of saves. And just talk a little bit about Tyler and where he is, and maybe, you know, as a goalie yourself, like what's been the difference so far for him?
Sure, Tyler's been outstanding for us. You know, statistically, it's proven. But when it shakes out, you know, we had some great goalie competition early through our preseason with guys like John Levine pushing Tyler from the get-go. And you know, in years past, you know, it's unfortunate. It hurts a little to say, but Tyler's kind of kryptonite has been his consistency. And he came in this year. He's putting in the work. He's doing well. He's watching a ton of film. Very dialed into our defensive schemes. Very dialed into, you know, our opposition shooters and tendencies. And I think he's just preparing himself like an older, more mature Princeton lacrosse player. And I think it's paid off. So, you know, we tweaked his positioning a little bit, but I think Tyler's just been extremely receptive. And, again, we ask our goalies to make the saves you're supposed to make. And if you can steal a couple off the board, you know, all positive for us. So Tyler's been doing well. We've got a lot of lacrosse left. We can hope to find consistency throughout the season.
The player who's leading the team in goals scored right now is Zach Currier. He's also the player who's leading the team in ground balls and caused turnovers. That's not a common thing to see somebody lead a team in all three of those categories. How unique is he? And, you know, understanding that the next opponent is Hopkins, you know, he really made a big name for himself on the national scene with the game that he had against Hopkins 2 years ago, where, you know, he just had this monstrous game against them.
Sure. I mean, Zach, again, like, we, you know, his name's going to come up most likely every week because he just does some he's a superstar type player. He's special. I mean, he does it in all facets of the game, you know, which we've highlighted. But, you know, we've got to continue to put Zach in the right spots for him to be successful. So,
but how much of what he does is just, like, especially the ground ball piece, like, how much of that is just innate?
It really is. I mean, you know, we train ground balls all the time within our program, and some guys just have a knack for it. I think that a lot of it comes into, you know, his indoor background and his box lacrosse background. I think that, you know, when you're playing at that level and in those games, the ball's not leaving the playing surface a lot. So there are a lot more opportunities for ground balls. You get a lot more practice at it at a young age. So I've got to think that along with his hockey background and his just innate ability to use his feet and his hands, he's just slick in those spots.
Are you concerned about how reliant your team is on the three main scorers, Currier, Gavin McBride, and Michael Sowers? You know, if you look in the last two games, there's 18 goals and 15 of them have either been scored by one of them or assisted by one of them or both, a goal and an assist by one of the three of them. Is that great that you have three guys who really can carry a team, or is it a concern that you need to balance things out a little more?
I wouldn't say it's a concern. I think it's great that those guys have gotten off to the start. They've figured out how to manipulate the systems and the defenses to capitalize on their opportunities. I think that, you know, as we get into our season and more guys get more comfortable in the offense and the schemes, you'll see different players start lighting up the scoreboard. I think that early on, Coach March has done a good job coaching against certain defensive schemes or tendencies where it just happens that the ball ends up in those guys' sticks in areas where we can finish. But I think you'll see a more well-rounded and balanced approach as the season goes on.
You got to be pleased with the contribution that Adam Hardy made against Hofstra. He had two big goals. You know, the one was a really tough one where he had a sort of, you know, it wasn't the second one is what you expect Hardy to do, which is get a little time to shoot with his hands free, and he can shoot it like very few others. The first one, he had a, you know, he's the biggest guy in the field. He had to get down in the middle of like eight guys, come away with the loose ball, and still have the strength and the balance and the composure to bounce it into the goal. It was a pretty impressive play by him.
No, it really was. It was Adam had a really nice game. He did a nice job. He provided our team with a nice spark. So, you know, we're going to keep looking for him to capitalize on opportunities like that, whether it's sticking his nose in and getting a good ground ball for us or taking advantage of a step-down opportunity. So thrilled that he was able to put up two for that game, and we're going to look to him. We're going to look to get a lot more out of him in the future.
So the next opponent is Johns Hopkins. It's one of the great rivalries that Princeton has. It goes back a long way. It's to me, it's a great thing that with all the conference realignment that went on and Hopkins joining the Big Ten, you know, the conference realignment really cost Princeton its series with Syracuse that was so good for so long. It's been a problem scheduling some ACC teams, you know, maybe some of the other Big Ten teams. It's still so hard to think of Maryland as being a Big Ten team and not an ACC team, but Hopkins is still there. It's still on the schedule. It's a team that Princeton's played every year since 1944. This is the 87th meeting of the rivalry. You know, Hopkins has a big advantage in the overall series because of a 24-game winning streak from 1967 to 1990. But, you know, Princeton has done pretty well since 1990. Actually, the streak ended in the 1990 NCAA tournament. And do you actually know who Hopkins' goalie was in that game where Princeton ended the streak?
Quint.
Quint is correct. So Quint will actually be here. The game on ESPN, 3 o'clock this Friday afternoon, and Quint will be here to do the color. The last basically 20 years, or you know, the century, it's been hard to win at home in this series. Princeton hasn't beaten Hopkins here since 2001. Last year was the first time that Hopkins had beaten Princeton at Homewood Field, going back to 2004, I think, off the top of my head. So despite not beating Hopkins here since 2001 and playing them every year this century, it's still Hopkins leads 9-8. So it's basically a 50-50 thing. So, you know, it's a great rivalry. I'm sure that you're happy that it's still on the schedule. On the other hand, Hopkins poses all kinds of problems, especially this year. They're really off to a good start.
Sure. I mean, we're thrilled to play them. We want to, again, like I mentioned in an earlier podcast, we want to try to play the best schedule we possibly can in the country. And I think part of that is having teams like John Hopkins on there. And, you know, Coach Petromal and I have had, you know, multiple conversations, just making sure that this game stays and this rivalry stays. And when it shakes out, I mean, it's a good one for both of us. What's the number one,
you know, I mean, is it Joel Tenney that you have to be aware of at all times? Kind of like there's Zach Currier, and they actually played together at Culver, you know, along with Dawson McKenzie and Riley Thompson. Or, you know, I mean, I think one of the things that's really stood out about Hopkins so far is they have incredible depth. I mean, it looks like they just can run wave after wave in the midfield.
They do. I mean, I think coming out of last game, they played, you know, something along the lines of 35 players. I think that's impressive.
Last game, by the way, was 13-5 win over the defending NCAA champ, North Carolina Tar Heels.
Absolutely. They're a heck of a team. They do have incredible depth. Coach Petromala, Coach Duan, Coach Benson do a heck of a job preparing these guys. We expect nothing but a tight game. I think that what Hopkins has always done best is limit mistakes. They do such a good job of playing the game and playing it the way that their coaches had prepared them during the week that, you know, when it shakes out, you know, you put your guys in positions to make plays. And, you know, it's normally growing up as a hockey player and a lacrosse guy, you know, you hear the same message from both coaches. You know, it's the team that's going to make the few mistakes, that's going to end up on top. So I think this game Saturday, or excuse me, this game Friday.
Friday at 3, ESPNU.
That's right. I think it'll be... I know it's going to be a great game, but I think it's going to be a game where the team that makes the fewer mistakes, you know, will jump out early.
So you have a couple of things where guys are playing with against friends of theirs. You know, I mentioned Tinney with the Culver guys and Michael Sowers and the defenseman from Hopkins who played together at Upper Dublin High School. Do you try too hard when you're playing against guys? You know, does it become like, you know, me against you, or you block that out and you just play?
I don't, you know, I'm not really sure. I think that, you know, speaking from personal experience, I think you're always excited to line up against, you know, a good friend and wearing a different color uniform, knowing that for that 60 minutes, you know, you've got no interest in seeing your best buddy, but you just want to compete and prove your best and prove your worth. So I'd hope to think that, you know, no one's going to try too hard and do anything outside of our systems, but I do think it'll give a little added extra burst.
So the Hopkins game is Friday at 3, and you know, if you're a Princeton lacrosse fan, then you're a general Princeton athletics fan. And so right after that game on ESPNU, you can watch the Princeton-Harvard men's basketball game, which starts at 5, here from Jadwin Gym. That game will also be on ESPNU. We won't talk again for our podcast until after the next game, which is Tuesday night at 7 at home against Quinnipiac. So it's the short turnaround. It's the, you know, the emotional game of Hopkins, and then the quick turnaround back to the Tuesday night Quinnipiac here. And then sort of an interesting thing, there's no game next Saturday, and then it's at Rutgers the following Tuesday. So you go Friday, Tuesday, Tuesday, which I can't remember the last time we didn't have a game on a Saturday. But what about Quinnipiac? You know, it's a team that did very well last year, maybe not off to the start they want to, but a lot of players back from a team that got to the NCAA tournament and won an NCAA tournament game and is clearly going to be another challenge.
We can't wait. You know, we're again, all our focus is on this Friday, but it'll quickly turn to Quinnipiac, you know, the minute the Hopkins games end. And it's why we scheduled this way. We try to get 5 games early. I think it's 5 games in 17 days. And then, you know, we're hoping to take care of business and maybe give our guys 2 days off in the beginning of the season in the beginning of the season as we get into Ivy play and, you know, just kind of be refreshed and go into kind of the middle part of our season. So we're thrilled. It's going to be a great opponent. I know they'll be ready, and I know our guys will be ready.
So, again, that's the Johns Hopkins game is Friday at 3 o'clock. That's on Sherrod Field. Actually, the first 5 games are all on Sherrod Field, and then 5 of the last 8 are on the road. So it's Hopkins on Friday and then Quinnipiac Tuesday. That's a 7 o'clock faceoff at Sherrod Field. We'll talk again next Thursday. We'll talk about those 2 games, talk about what you're going to do on your weekend off that you don't have a game, probably the first Saturday in March that you haven't had a game in decades. And we'll look ahead to Rutgers, which I assume is going to be a big game for Coach Bernhardt, and who was a coach at Rutgers for the last few years, and then the Ivy League that starts after that. But as far as this episode of the Tiger Laxcast, anything you want to close with?
Nope. Appreciate it. Appreciate all the support. Hopefully a lot of Tiger fans getting out of work early on Friday.
And, you know, people talk about, like, starting games at weird times. And one thing I found with these games that, you know, this game's clearly being played at that time for ESPNU purposes. And what we found is attendance is usually pretty good, and Hopkins is always going to be a well-attended game. But what we've really found is that there's large pockets of alumni groups that gather to watch the game someplace on TV. And I think that there's been a lot of really positive reaction to playing these games at these times, and that's why we're so in favor of doing it. So Princeton-Hopkins, Friday at 3. Coach Madelon, thanks. This has been Episode 3 of Tiger Laxcast. We're Coach Matt Madelon, Jerry Price, and we will talk to you again next week.